Okay, your microphones are live. You're live.
Good morning. Welcome to the March 20th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. Amended items, addendum to item number one, replacing Exhibit B to include the signature of County Council. Number two is an addendum to item 11, replace pages 1 through 7 of amendment number 4 as Exhibit A to the amendment was incorrectly identified as such. Addendum for item number 18 is to replace pages 1 through 30 of the agreement from Far Western Anthropological Research Group with pages 1 through 31. Exhibits A and B were not correctly identified, and Exhibit C was inadvertently omitted. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And those are your changes.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda, and I have two requests to speak on consent, the first being Mr. Eric Greening and the second person, Dr. C. Height.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening, and I have comments on – oh, happy first day of spring, and I have comments on three of the items. The first two I'm bringing up are just to say, yeah, go for it. Number one, we'll raise – the profile of some of the issues that are expected to take a lot of public comment. And one of the good consequences of this is that by moving some of these from the Subdivision Review Board to the Planning Commission, it means that they are, thanks to AGP video, on television for people to see. And then number four, I just want to give a shout out for the concept and practice of nonviolent communication. It's not just a skill set, it is a reorientation of how one relates to other people. And the more it can be propagated in this community, the better. On 11, I just would like to, as I understand it, this habitat conservation plan does not cover the lowest couple of miles of Arroyo Grande Creek. And I know the very mouth eventually may or may not be covered in some state parks habitat conservation that may or may not take effect, which may or may not be operating in the same perceptual universe as this one. I also know that Los Berros Creek is undammed and has steelhead spawning habitat up its length. And so I just wanted to raise the profile of some of these issues and essentially good work so far as it goes, but not complete work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Dr. C. Height.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos, number four. I'm going to read the whole item. Request to approve a two-year contract with United Way of San Luis Obispo County beginning March 2012 and ending March 2014 to provide the nonviolent communication TM, parentheses, NVC, education trial fulfilling county innovation work plan number 4 to provide prevention and early intervention services to reduce mental illness and emotional challenges among transitional age youth, their families, and caregivers throughout the county. I didn't exactly find out what transitional youth is, but I do know that they use the word transitional housing when they're talking about people coming from homelessness into sustainable or stable housing. And I'm all for this. I'm all for innovation. It's you have a whole generation to socialize now, because getting mad and saying something used to be okay on the playground, but it isn't anymore because now it's a terrorist threat. And children who are expressing themselves in frustration and anger don't realize that the rules have changed quite dramatically. When you talk about nonviolent communication, it says high-risk transitional-aged youth, an underserved group. These are the kids that are going to fall through the cracks, and these are no doubt kids of poverty, kids that are undereducated or come from families that are undereducated. And the challenge in recovery, children who are frustrated because they live in the richest county, one of the richest counties in the United States, and they're underserved because there's no hospitality to the poor. This is becoming like a gated community, and that's been said before, and it's very obvious. How frustrating is it for a child to see their parents degraded when they're sick and they can't get health care? How frustrating and sad, and doesn't it make them angry that their parents no longer can get, or their grandmother can no longer get to medical care because you cut their dial-a-ride services in Los Osos, or you cut the transportation to CHC in Morro Bay, and the hours in Morro Bay are cut, and they sit in a waiting room with a lot of other poor people and hear, oh, we're going to close the clinic. They've been saying that for years. You know, mental illness is mental suffering. It's when you abandon a group of people and you abandon them on their characteristics of being diverse, different, and being the 33% of the 99% that are destined to be unemployed permanently or underemployed, because that is the way the capitalist system works. So I'm for this, and I'm for the fact that this is innovation and that they're really going to do something to work with children rather than them be stigmatized. You're mentally ill, you're dangerous, we don't want you a part of our society. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. That concludes my request to speak on the consent item, so I'll bring it back to my colleagues on the board and Mr. Gibson.
None, thank you, sir.
Okay, Supervisor Hill?
None either, sir.
Mr. Meacham?
None.
Okay, and Mr. Tischel?
I'm on item two, please.
Okay, take it away.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. I'd just like to congratulate and encourage County Park staff on this item to go out and seek the grants for the park in San Miguel. I know my years on the Park Commission, San Miguel Park was kind of a sat on the back burner and not a lot was done, but we did acquire the one lot and see that the expansion is going to go on and the closing of the street. I think that's all great, and we need to do this more in our small communities where there's not a lot of entertainment and not a lot of things for people to do. So go forth and conquer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Supervisor Teixeira. Mr. Hutchison, can you answer the question regarding the HCP for Zone 3 and Arroyo Grande Creek? Mr. Greening was wondering if it included the entire stretch of the creek from the dam down.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works, Environmental Division. The 2004 early draft of the HCP set a limit at the upper end of the flood control channel, simply because the flood control channel is the subject of a waterway management program that's being processed through a different part of the Endangered Species Act. However, Zone 3, the advisory committee there, and also the technical advisory committee have the boundary issue on their list of issues that we need to work through. It's been the subject of some discussion, and we'll be delving into the details, the pros and cons of expanding that boundary farther down the creek as we work with this consultant, H.T. Harvey, on the project.
Very good. Thank you very much. And, yes, Supervisor Meacham?
Ready for motion.
Well, okay, I just want to comment on item four also, which is the partnership with United Way to offer the nonviolent communication training. It's part of the Mental Health Services Act Innovation Program. The county was successful in receiving a number of grant awards to implement innovation to help a variety of mental health services programs, and that's one. And I'm happy to say that I've taken that training, and it is an acquired skill, I must say, and I'm just happy to see United Way moving that program forward for the next 2 years. So with that, Supervisor Meacham?
Move approval of the consent calendar as amended.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent calendar as amended. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. With that, we'll move on to public comment on items on the agenda, and I want to start with Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered if Jamie Wallace and Myrlene Morris Whitaker would come forward. I had the honor and privilege last week of appearing at an anniversary, a 50th anniversary of Seacrest, the Seacrest Hotel in Shell Beach. Many of you may know it's one of the historic hotels in our area. It's the hotel that actually kind of started things off in Pismo as one of the, you know, one of the exciting destinations for our county, and it's recently
very often. So we are very appreciative of that because we cannot survive without our repeat guest, and we've shown to them that we're doing a great job, and they continue to come back even with the various changes we've made to the facility. And we thank you for the acknowledgement.
Yeah, the renovations just look beautiful, and it's continues to be a great place to come visit and have events at, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being here this morning. Let's see, I have several requests to speak on public comment, so please come forward as I call your name, and we'll start with Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFada. I would like to remind everyone that we do have the Los Osos Wastewater Project on the agenda this afternoon, and I would ask you to refrain from commenting on that project until this afternoon when it is open for public hearing. Let's see. Ms. Taylor.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I am a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. Every one of you sitting on this board is responsible for the community of San Luis Obispo and the independent community of Los Osos because it is an independent group of persons. The lack of transparency and disclosure and the Los Osos Sewer Project are numerous. The adjustments of cost for acquisitions of properties, let alone the major cost of the site of the treatment facilities, the cost of the Jacamazi properties, have never been disclosed.
Mr. Chairman, that
actually that has nothing to do with the agenda item, sir. If
yes,
you will look at the Brown Act.
Ms. Taylor. Ms. Taylor, please. The treatment facility is on the afternoon agenda.
As is the budget.
I don't
want to debate the issue with you. Anything related to the Los Osos Wastewater Project needs to wait until this afternoon. So let's not.
All right. Let's go forward then.
Breaking the Brown Act.
The cost of the ISJ to the Prohibition Zone paid for from the assessment district that benefits the whole community, the adjustment of the $2.2 million from the roads fund, the $80,000 spent already for preliminary road plans, plus the $1.5 million for drainage problems that have been going on for years and years. Then the Habitat Conservation Plan, the cost to be $136,759. That is supposed to come from grant funding. The total grant to be $311,483 with a remaining of $174,724 to fund a cultural study. Legal counsel and staff time. What grant? Has it been received? And how much? This is transparency. We're not getting it. The need for nitrate well testing now has been strongly advised by the Regional Water Quality Control Board to take place now. At the Thursday, March 15th meeting, the public was advised that the county told the Water Quality Control Board staff that there was not a problem for the funding, but the tests were not to take place. The funding is the question. How can this be justified when the Water Quality Control Board plays such a strong part in the sewer project? They are providing funding. Is it any question that there is a major need for a forensic audit of the Los Osos Sewer Project when all of these funds are being transferred, used, and perhaps abused? If the shoe fits, wear it.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. And I will say again that the Los Osos Wastewater Project is on the agenda this afternoon. Anything related to the project, you have an opportunity to speak this afternoon. If I determine that your public comment this morning is on the Los Osos Wastewater Project, I will not allow you to speak on the project this afternoon. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Dr. C. Height.
I'm here to see that common sense prevails and to roast Mr. Gibson's project and go to a cheaper project because it will cause over 2,000 renter properties and their families that number close to $7,000 or $8,000 of people and others who have no voice to be thrown out of their abodes. What about those businesses? What's left of them? Probably many owners of these rental homes are investors. These investors that own these homes are not saying anything because after the sewer is completed, they will walk away with big profits after they flip these homes on to others. The silent majority of citizens are relying on you other four to intervene and to change Gibson and Algren's course of only looking at this expensive $200 million gravity project. And by the way, where is Senator Blakesley and Assemblyman Caucho these days? It was Blakesley's AB 2701 that got us into this mess. 5 or 6 years ago, we were ready to go with a step system that would have cost us $105 a month instead of Gibson and Algren's $200 to $300 a month flawed project. On top of that, Blakesley head of staff, Christine, said affordability and completion between competition between gravity and alternatives would be in AB 2701. To date, we have seen none and probably will never see it as long as Gibson and Algren are involved. Caccio said he would try to get more money if he's voted to the assembly. He should have said, after I bend Gibson's arm, he'll get involved. No change will happen as long as Gibson and Algren's cronies and campaign contributions are here. That's why we're asking you other four to intervene, because it surely looks like corruption is very evident here. No matter Mr. Jim Grant's spin, will be able to get you out of this mess if the feds get involved. We only seem to only get an update from Mr. Gibson and his crowd when he wants more money.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. C. Height, followed by Eric Greening.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos. How many times have you interrupted me and suggested the old lady doesn't know what she's talking about, that she's off task, that she's off subject? Well, actually, I've been speaking since 2003, and you only interrupted me twice, and you embarrassed yourself because in one instance, and that was about the Coastal Commission, two men spoke before me and made the same statement about not paying attention to sticking a bus bench on top of a drain culvert, and I only added just some specific information that it wasn't ADA compliant, and I was interrupted. And you sent a message. You didn't like what I had to say, and so you violated the Brown Act, and you went with a stereotype. You sent a message as a board that don't listen to her. Women don't know what they're talking about, especially when they're older. The other time I was talking about emergency We're talking about the Diablo Canyon Power Plant, and I was giving some personal information about what it meant to me when I moved back to Los Osos and the sirens went off, and I didn't have the card that told me that they were. What a personally horrifying thing it was to me to be that close to the power plant, and my only child and son was there helping me unpack. And I was interrupted. All those speakers who came after me were really off subject. So, you know, you're taking an adversarial approach with one of the poorest communities. You know, Oceano and Los Osos, I guess we just don't matter much. It's really sad, but I'm talking about the 33% of the 99% who were at the bottom. And they can't stay at the bottom unless somebody has their boot in the middle of their back. And it's human nature. It's natural for it, and that's what people don't realize, is the discrimination and oppression is human nature to keep people at the bottom, because they will be climbing up, their children will be climbing up, and they will be competing with your lazy little rich kids in school because they're smart, they're imaginative, they learn, they want to learn, they don't have it handed to them on a silver platter. And I'm going to say what I've heard being said in the back is that, you know, your item this afternoon is not all inclusive, and so it's going to be really interesting when people say what they want to say and get interrupted, that they're not actually on subject, because you outline what that subject is. So this kind of oppression, this kind of adversarial position, you don't recognize who the good guys are. You do not recognize who the good guys of your community are and how hard they work for this community.
Thank you, Ms. Hyde. Eric Greening, followed by Lindy Owen.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I appreciate Mr. Hutchinson's response to my previous concerns. Hopefully things will be moving, and then catastrophe that has not been subject to our county's tabletop exercises. I know that that doesn't mean that all of the questions about evacuation or whether sheltering in place is ever going to be a viable option have been settled either, but there is a huge... There are things being lived to this day in northeastern Japan that are lessons for us. There are both the areas that have become ghost towns, where the domestic animals have died for lack of care, and where the people who used to live there are living somewhere on something, and what's the plan for that? And then there are the marginal areas, the towns where some of the old people are staying, but people with children have left. Nope, they're not getting sick right away, but there are statistical concerns about the likelihood of a shortened lifespan. There are the issues of whether agricultural products from certain areas can be sold or not. There is kind of a cloud of not wanting to get things from those areas, whether there's a hot spot in that particular field or not. These are all things we could be dealing with in this county that have not been discussed. Simply issues of your own county employees. Will they be expected to come to work if the radiation readings are just barely sub-evacuation level? Will they be expected to endanger their health and come to work? What if they want to get their families out of here? What if they have been evacuated? Will they stay on the county payroll until they find other employment? What will be the sources of the taxes for that county payroll? Lots of questions still to be answered. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Greening. Lindy Owen, followed by Elaine Watson. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Lindy Owen, and I live in Los Osos. I live in a prohibition zone. The prohibition zone is basically saying that most of my town is polluting from our septic tanks, but we really haven't ever seen any proof of that. So what happens is I've been involved for 12 years because I was told that we would be looking, that we would form a community services district and take our destiny into our hands, take it away from the bad, bad county who had designed a very expensive gravity collection plant prior. And yes, so we developed our own community services district and started off with a very modern, progressive type of collection, which would have been keeping a septic tank and just collecting the liquid off of that. It's very nice to think that you can just run liquid through pipes instead of, and then they can be horizontal, they can be directionally bored, they can be 4 feet under, they can be 2 feet from a water line, they can be in the side of the street. A lot of advantages. And when an earthquake hits, they're flexible. They're easy to fix. They're not 18 feet under running through your aquifer, leaking raw sewage into your drinking supply. I thought that seemed like a really intelligent method for collection and resolving some of the pollution problems that might be going on. I thought a partial sewering made lots of sense because there are areas in town that have now gone under, they're sitting in high groundwater because we have not addressed our water basin problems. I thought there was like some intelligence in this. You know, some solution. Somebody wanted something. But I was way, way, way wrong. This got eaten up by a corporate sewer builder back when Pava Ogren first became our preliminary manager. They got brought in. We got polluted long ago, and we have never gotten the system that we were supposed to get. We don't have a system. The system that we have designed is going to probably run us, I believe, $300 million by the time it's done. Wait and see. Mr. Meacham knows. These things escalate radically. So I'm very, very discouraged. You know where sewage spills come from? Gravity collection systems and treatment plants. How many sewage spills have you seen from a septic tank? How big are they? How many thousands of gallons? Zero. Well, excuse me, let's say 200 gallons, I think, is what they can hold. I'm asking you to do an intervention. This is disgusting, what is going to be presented later on today. Another $2 million added to our project. You have to intervene or just go ahead and say that you're the ones that allowed Los Osos to be destroyed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Richard Marketson? That's my last request to speak on public comment this morning.
Richard Margetson. Tonight, I contacted the CSD general manager, two of the board of directors members, and our district engineer. Not one of them, gentlemen, knew about this contract. Let me read a few of the terms of this contract to you and see if you, as a member of a committee or a water purveyor in the community, would be happy to not know this information that is going for final approval before the school district tonight. First of all, the recycle water rates. The rate charged for recycled water shall be based on one unit, 100 cubic feet, of water. District shall pay the county for the delivery and use of each unit of water according to the rate the district is paying its potable water purveyor at the district property with a discount of 10%. The following initial rates are fixed for the first 5 years. And additionally, in this section, there's no discussion of what's going to happen with the revenue that the county will be collecting that was revenue that the two purveyors were collecting. On top of that, the county, prior to initial delivery of recycled water, the county will pay the actual cost of any relocating, retrofitting, or remodeling of any existing facilities at the district property up to $50,000 that are reasonably necessary to accommodate the use of recycled water. Item 3. The district may at any time, at its sole discretion and subject to legal requirements, apply for a permit to drill 6 water wells.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson.
If the county is unable to deliver recycled water.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson.
Well, we're going to stop this tonight because we're going to be at the water board.
That concludes public comment on items not on the agenda. Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of on a lighter note, last Friday I attended a graduation at Lillian Larson School for the GREAT program. This is the second graduation that they had, one in Shandon and one in San Miguel, that the sheriff's office put on and is handled by the resource, the school resource officers. And this is addressing somewhat along the lines of item number four in terms of the bullying, the conflict resolution, and gang aversion from for the kids. It's a great program. They had 67 kids graduate from this last Friday and 63 from Shandon School. They're going to be moving down into the South County next, I believe. So my compliments to the Sheriff's Department for the work they did there. I think that will pay huge dividends in the years to come.
Thank you, Supervisor Meacham. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, please?
Certainly. That's item 14, a request to select activities for funding under 2012 Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnership Act, and the Emergency Solution Grant Programs, and adopt the resolution approving the Urban County of San Luis Obispo Program 2012 Action Plan for the San Luis Obispo Consolidated Plan.
Okay. Supervisor Hill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, with an abundance of caution, I'm going to recuse myself on this item. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hill. Mr. Lilly, are you taking the lead on this, or Mr. Navarro? How's that going to
work? Dana Lilly with your planning staff. If Mr. Navarro has his PowerPoint up and is ready, he'll be ready to go.
I am ready, and I'm Tony Navarro with County Planning and Building. Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. Again, I'm Tony Navarro with your Department of Planning and Building. And today we're here to look at and consider the 2012 Community Development Block Grant Program, the Home Investment Partnership Act Program, and the Emergency Solutions Program. And before I begin, I would like to present I'll present the PowerPoint presentation to the clerk, but I also want to bring your attention that on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, the City Council of Aurora Grande approved their funding recommendations, and so there's a revision to the Exhibit B in the staff report, and I can pass copies of those out right now. I will continue. The 2012 allocations for the entitlement programs that we've mentioned, balance of those funds, simply because there was an issuance of regulations on the new emergency solutions grant, and that requires additional time from staff to set up programs and work with nonprofits that could receive funding for that program. So that will be coming to you on May 8th. And it will also involve not only the 2012 action plan, but last year's action plan, which has an amount of emergency solutions grant that was not allocated simply because the regulations were not released by the federal government. So the county share of CDBG funds is a little bit under $725,000. Which represents actually an increase to the county share of the entitlement allocation of CDBG funds. Unfortunately, because of new census data that we must implement with the program, all the city's funding allocations went down compared to last year. And that's we were expecting it to cut back anyway because of the federal programs, but the new census data reduced those figures for the cities and increased the allocation to the county. A quick overview of the CDBG program. We really have three objectives for the program, and that is to benefit low and moderate income people, prevent and eliminate slums and blight conditions, and meet any emergency needs. And most of the programs that are funded through the cities and the county meet the primary or the first objective, which is the benefit low and moderate income people. Under the CDBG program, there's a cap on the amount of funds that any jurisdiction can allocate towards public services, and that is the 15% of the allocation. So what staff is proposing to do with that 15% is to allocate it to the Prado Day Center for the Homeless, the Maxine Lewis Shelter, the El Camino Homeless Organization up in Atascadero, but also the Alliance for Pharmaceutical Access and Transition of Food and Shelter. And these recommendations are actually came directly from the Homeless Services Oversight Council. Staff thought that was a good idea. We forward that recommendation in our draft recommendations and are so making that recommendation to you today. Under economic development, we only received one application, but it's a worthy application for the funding amount that they requested in the amount of $35,000. And this is to provide technical assistance to businesses in the county in the hopes that that will generate new jobs throughout the county. Under public facilities, we had quite a few applications. Unfortunately, not everybody was able to get funding, although the allocations were not large. So we were able to look at numerous applications this year, including the San Lawrence Terrace well. It's a rehabilitation project of that well by the San Miguel Community Services District. ADA improvements to the Vets Hall here in San Luis Obispo, and that application is by General Services. Also, the Homeless Campus Project by the Community Action Partnership in $50,000. And the City of San Luis Obispo is also contributing towards that project through their CDBG funds. Next is the property acquisition by North County Connection up in the city of Atascadero. The city of Atascadero has also approved $55,000 for that property acquisition, plus some of their in-lieu fees that were for housing. That's planned. Looks like it could be up to $100,000 that will help North County Connection with that property acquisition. And then there's the help the Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park in Los Osos to replace their water and well system. The water and sewer system. Under housing, we have the Minor Home Repair Program by the Community Action Partnership folks, the Oak Leaf Home Permit Fee Assistance by People's Self Help in Napomo, and that rounds out to about $1,500 per household, low-income household. The Solar Affordable Housing Program by Grid Alternatives to assist low-income households to install solar panels to their homes. And then there's 20% that could be allocated towards the administration of the program, and from there we're making a recommendation to approve $15,000 for the homeless management information system, and also we have some responsibilities with fair housing activities to go to the California Rural Legal Assistance, and then lastly the program administration of $128,000. The next program is the Home Investment Partnership Act. Again, this is where we take a huge hit, but we're getting about $823,000, so we're a bit limited to what we can do. So we're looking at home buyer assistance, rental housing, but we also have the tenant-based rental assistance program, actually two programs that are headed by both housing authorities, the one in Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo, to assist low-income folks. And the county, the planning and building, applied for $50,000 for a first-time home buyer program. And then there's funding for the administration of the tenant-based rental assistance program, and then also for county staff at $75,000. And then we come to the emergency solutions grant. Our allocation is $127,000, but as I mentioned earlier, we're just looking at about $91,000 that could go towards administration, rehabilitation, maintenance, and supportive services at those emergency shelters that are eligible, which are five in the county. And those projects include the Prado Day Center, Maxine Lewis, the two women's shelters, and, of course, the El Camino Homeless Organization. And then the balance, about $35,000, as I mentioned, will come before your board on May 8th for rapid rehousing and homelessness prevention activities. Let's see, I think I mentioned these programs. These are the allocations for those two the programs under ESG that we're recommending to your board. There are the two women's shelters. And that really ends my presentation. If you have any questions, I'll be
happy to. Yes, thank you, Mr. Navarro. I actually have a couple. We'll start with those and then see if my colleagues have anything that they want to ask staff before I open it to the public. Mr. Navarro, you mentioned the different categories of the CDBG money, and one of which is the economic development, and there was only one application submitted for economic development, and $35,000 was granted to the Mission Community Foundation, and then they distribute that. I'm curious, how many, well, two things. Mm-hmm. How did you advertise the availability of that money to various entities, and also have we had more requests for that economic development piece in the past? I'm just curious that we didn't get more than one application for that.
Now, the first part of the question, how did we advertise to... Yeah.
Outreach to potential users.
Well, we do release a request for proposals, and we have about 300 people on our mailing list and several more hundred on email. So we distribute to them. And, you know, this is a list we've been accumulating for about 17 years. So we have a pretty good... communication with the applicants. And typically they apply year in and year out. So, you know, through the newspaper, email, U.S. mail, word of mouth pretty much. You know, if there's anyone interested, you know, if they hear about it, we talk to them and definitely get them on our mailing list so that we can advertise and disseminate the information.
So rather extensive outreach effort.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, yes. The second part of your question, we have had in the past the Economic Vitality Corporation apply for a revolving loan program for businesses. If there's a need for funding to expand an existing business, then they can receive a loan. And one of the conditions is that that expansion create a job. Mm-hmm. And so that is one of the criteria. And it's something that we report to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And so when those loans are repaid, then it goes back out again for the same program and, again, same conditions to expand a business and create a job.
Is there a designated amount for economic development, or does it depend on the request?
It depends on the request, but we do have goals in our five-year consolidated plan. Not only for allocating funds for that goal, but also for job generation. And unfortunately, we're not going to meet those goals simply because we're not seeing the funding coming out of Washington. With these cutbacks, I mean, we just have to report it to HUD in our annual report to them, and that is one of the things we do report to them, is that we won't be able to meet these goals. But we try. We try. Mm-hmm. That is one of the guidance that we receive from HUD is if you're not going to reach those goals, do your best, and that's what we try to do. But the Mission Community Services folks there at the Women's Program, they do provide a lot of technical assistance to businesses at no charge, plus also education. They run through a 10-week seminar or classes where you learn how to run a business. I mean, simple things from personnel. Well, not I shouldn't say personnel is easy, but personnel issues, a business plan, how to apply for a loan, how to.
For my colleagues, so I will open it to the public. I have several requests to speak on this item, beginning with Larry Felt, followed by Susan Warren. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, supervisors. Larry Felt is my name. I'm a supervisor with Community Action Partnership Homeless Services. I've come here this morning to appreciate you. I want to thank you for the support that you've given to the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter and the Prado Day Center over the years. Because of you, countless homeless men, women, and children have found shelter, sustenance, services, and hope because of the support that you've given Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter and Prado Day Center in past years. And I've just come this morning to ask you to approve your staff's recommendation to support us again this year. Thank you very much.
Okay, just one moment, please. Supervisor Meacham has a question.
Thank yes, sir. You. I know that the folks from the El Camino Homeless Organization, when they see folks on the street that are seeking assistance of some sort, mostly food, they hand them a slip of paper that tells them where they can go and when they can get a hot meal or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do we do that here? Because I'm noticing a lot more, and frighteningly so, younger folks on the street, and usually they're asking for food. So I don't know if we have the means to, I mean, I'd be happy to hand them something if we had something available to us, but do we do that here?
Yes, sir. And that is a good observation. There do seem to be more younger homeless people these days than there used to be. We do have a list of places, both in the city of San Luis Obispo and other cities in the county as well, where people can get free food. And if you like, I'll see to it that you get these lists. But then food, too, free food is available to homeless people at the Prado Day Center and at the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. So people that come to access services at Prado during the day get breakfast and lunch, and then they can get dinner at the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter in the evening. And again, as a result of your support. Thank you.
I guess my point being is, how do they know? How do these folks out there know that this is available to them?
Dee Torres has an answer to that. Dee, if you'd like to respond as Supervisor Meacham.
Definitely. Real briefly, there is definitely a web and a system here in the city of outreach. We do things such as work with even the buses, where they have our flyers and our information, and they give them out on the buses. We do. Most of our staff even carry bus tokens, because we're fortunate enough that the city provides them at no charge to us. So for emergency situations, when we do meet somebody downtown or we're doing our outreach, we can hand those out and send them where, you know, the appropriate food. I will tell you in my experience, because I live here too, that the majority of the people that are here with the signs, that they do, they've already come from the center generally, and they have eaten. The signs are usually meant to evoke a certain sympathy and not generally looking for food. We don't turn anybody away from the food lines, but we still do the outreach. It's kind of a fine line, but we do have a web.
I understand that, Dio. I think the problem in some cases when folks engage with people on the street,
mm-hmm.
they're a little bit reluctant to do so, and they're a little nervous about that.
Definitely.
But if they had the means to say, you want a hot meal, here's where you can go to get it.
Right.
Rather than get into, because I know a lot of folks just want some money.
But, right.
And heaven knows what they're going to use it for.
Yeah, we have, as Larry talked about, we have flyers and that talk about all the different services, and we pass those out on a regular basis. And our volunteers take them if that's they're wanting to do that. It's a fine line. You have to be careful. Sometimes people get angry when they're approached in that manner. Because they just do. I mean, you were talking about sometimes people that are severely mentally ill and have some other issues. So it's a fine line. We don't encourage people to approach. We encourage people to promote the services, and then we work with our web of providers to disseminate the information of how people can get the services. So when you have volunteers approaching individuals, I've just been around too long and have seen some pretty scary situations.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson, did you have a question?
I would only second Mr. Meacham's inclination here.
Project for us.
Along with that, just to let you know, we're working on a system of care in the North County, working with ECHO. Right now, we're doing a lot of cooperative things where people that are really interested in recovery stay there in the evening. They come hang out with us during the day. We're getting some terrific results. We hope that, no, we really expect that to be a really good partnership. There's a couple of other grassroots things happening right now as part of this idea about system of care, and one of those is our new homeless providers group in the North County, and we're putting together a website which any provider or person can go on to find out what kind of resources are out there, especially in the North County, for food, shelter, any of those kinds of case management, any of the kinds of services. So you'll be hearing from us. We're in the formation stages of that. Also, I'm on another committee that we're working on through social services, but it's a group of providers. We're putting together cards, wallet cards, that will give those same kinds of resources, and we're not sure yet if it's going to be all the county-wide on it, or if it'll be specific to Central North County and South County, but you will all be receiving those. We'll make sure that you guys get those. Expect to have those in a couple of months. And the third thing is that along with this system of care piece, I'm working with community health centers and Dignity Healthcare. And we're bringing UCLA Integrated Services are coming here with a program on May 14th and 15th. The 14th, they'll be here for the Health Commission meeting. And on the 15th, they'll be putting on a day-long training. And this has to do with the screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment that our ER physicians, community health centers, and primary care physicians will be doing, so that we can really begin this discussion of helping people get into recovery, which and access the services they need. So at the same time, we're trying to work and get together and make sure we've got referral sources for folks. So you'll be hearing more from us as these are moving along. They're moving along quickly. And so hopefully by this next July, we'll have a lot of these pieces in place. And again, thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Diane Reese, followed by Ken Trigero. Ms. Reese.
Good morning. Diane Reese, representing Mission Community Services and the Women's Business Center. And I want to make sure that we understand that the Women's Business Center is somewhat of a misnomer. We service both men and women. Probably our client base is pretty much equal. As Tony mentioned before, we provide business services for startup companies and for companies that are up and running and wish to grow, or perhaps, especially with our current economy, have to redirect their businesses. Our services are targeted to low and moderate income people, and these funds are becoming increasingly important to us. As many organizations, we have more initiations for service requests, coupled with a dwindling budget from that we're partially funded by the SBA, and that budget is starting to see some major haircuts in it. So we provide our services through individual counseling, one-on-one counseling, through workshops and classes. Currently, we have a 15-week business startup class that's in progress. By the time that 15 weeks is over, we have each student has a formalized business plan that, if in fact they were seeking funds, they could go to a bank with. We have our workshops, which are business topical, very hands-on, QuickBooks. Social media, how do you get your website up and maintain your website for no cost to you, public speaking, et cetera. We also provide fiscal literacy classes. Many times our clientele, before they could even think about starting a business, have to go back and learn how to basically keep their personal funds in order to start. many times, I work as a counselor there, I'm sitting across the desk from somebody that has just left the career one stop. There's no jobs for them. So whether they, these are not people many times that have always wanted to start a business, they're thrilled with the idea. It's sort of like, if I'm going to survive, I'm going to have to figure out something on my own. So what we do is a lot of self-employment training.
Program whereby we can attract about $15 million in private equity that we need to start our first phase of a project that has 300 new units there. So I know you have all supported this project and are really aware and of what it means, but I was just going to remind you, since the topic of economic development is on your mind, as you discussed a little bit earlier, that even though this project doesn't come under that category, technically it's really a economic stimulus and development project, in that not only is it preserving affordable housing that is on the site, but it produces quite a bit more of new construction and permanently affordable units, and creates in its first phase about 300 new jobs using the federal formula for calculating that. And over the life of the project, it's projected to produce about 800 new jobs. And so it's a really good investment. This amount of home funds relative to the total cost is not a large amount, but it acts as a real lever. It's a great investment for you to be able to attract quite a bit of investment into the community and provide economic stimulus. So we really thank you for your support to this point. We're pretty hopeful about our prospects at this point as well, and hope that you'll go ahead and approve the staff recommendations.
Very good.
Thanks.
Yes. Ken, Supervisor Meacham has a question.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks for all your work on this as well. Are you guys going to be affected at all by the redevelopment issues from the city of Paso Robles?
Yes, we were affected, and really your allocation today is the way we were able to bridge the gap, the problem that we ran into as a result of the governor eliminating the redevelopment agencies. We lost a commitment of the local housing funds that were reserved for our project of about $1.4 million, and which the governor used to pay the to balance the state budget, as you know. The city of Paso Robles offered, and this was just a couple weeks ago, to defer some of the development fees. And that was about $1 million worth. And with your home funds of $300,000 that you're hopefully going to approve for this project, we've been able to make up that loss, if you will, to the project. So going forward, we're okay, but we were definitely affected by that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trigero, and good luck with your project. It's a wonderful one. Hank Hohenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Hank Hohenstein. I'm a resident of Templeton. I'm here to talk about the homelessness issue. I heard this morning the expression end homelessness, and I want to say that this is absolutely not possible. It's an absolute fact that you will never end homelessness. You may be able to reduce it, but by saying you're going to end homelessness actually raises false expectations. At one time when I was responsible for allocating CDBG funds, I called a local rescue mission and I said, how many homeless people do you handle down in your facility? And he said, one. But if you drive by there at any particular given time, there are probably 100 people there. And why is that? The reason for that is that we do not break, I did not hear today really explicitly explain what it is that our homelessness funds are going for. We have five categories of homelessness. Number one, alcohol or drug dependency. Number two, mental illness. Number three, criminal. Number four, lifestyle. And number five, situational. What we need to have, there was one woman here I thought that made a great deal of sense, and that is that we need to address the issues that are explicitly defined within the homelessness person, and that is drug and alcohol care and consideration. Mental illness. That's not a homelessness issue. It's a mental illness issue. To help individuals is absolutely admirable. It is why we're here on the face of this earth. to help individuals is our responsibility. But why is it that we must take funds out of the hands of our people, ship it off to some far bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., and because of President Nixon, now send it back to the community to employ a person now to help take these funds and distribute them among the community? Keep more money in the community. Every time you raise a fee, every time you raise taxes, you contribute to the homelessness issue. Our church is very active in the Paso Robles area in helping individuals. Our church could do more if our people in our church did not have as much money taken out of their pockets by government. I applaud those individuals who have...
It's a measure of staff's care for both the mission and the organizations that pursue that mission that we end up with a carefully thought out approach to how we might distribute these funds. Unless colleagues have other comments, I'm prepared to move staff's recommendation.
Okay, Supervisor Meacham has a comment.
Thank you, and then I let my colleague go ahead and make the motion. But
okay.
The last gentleman that spoke, I think he hit it right on the head in terms of some of our, I guess, our direct problems that we have to deal with. And I think in a lot of cases, we are. I know that one of the comments, several of the comments that the board made when we talked about the expansion of the women's jail and also the juvenile jail, was to try to find programs that we can assist folks to try to get them off of the problems that they have rather than to continue to add to the population of our system. So we're trying to do that, and staff has a very difficult challenge in front of them all the time when we talk about community development block grants, because the needs are greater and the funds are less. We see that in the community-based organizations when we'll be talking about that in the budget times. So my compliments to staff for the hard work they do on that. It's not easy, and we do appreciate that. It takes the load off our back. All we have to do is just make the decision.
Yeah, thank you. And if I may follow up with that, Supervisor Meacham, I do agree. We are making a holistic effort to address all the issues that cause homelessness, and I want to compliment staff. I've worked with them extensively through the HSOC, Homeless Services Oversight Council, and we have some very competent and knowledgeable people working in the county that can deal with these federal criteria that allow us to fund these programs. And I just want to compliment staff. There's some people that aren't here today that are very much involved in all of this, and I want to acknowledge their efforts as well. So feel fortunate that we're able to do as well as we do in funding these programs. And so with that, Supervisor Gibson, if you
Mr. Chairman, I'd just comment briefly that the staff report doesn't really reveal the details of how each of these organizations and programs work. Mr. Hohenstein identified a number of very specific issues that I think he articulated them quite well, that we have programs that get after each of those and all of those together. And that, to the extent we have success, is because the care that they do. So with that, I will move staff's recommendation with the revisions of Exhibit B.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. DeShera.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Okay, that concludes this item. Thank you, Mr. Navarro, Mr. Lilly. We're going to take a short break and reconvene at 10:35 for our final, is that the final item of the morning?
It is.
So we'll reconvene at 10:35.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I might, so that I don't come back down. I'm going to recuse myself from the next item on the agenda. I do have a property in Santa Margarita that would have a direct reflection on the decision of the board, so I will recuse myself from that next item.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Meacham. So. Madam Clerk.
You are live.
Okay, thank you very much. Would you introduce the next item, please?
Why, certainly. I would be happy to. That would be item 15, the submittal of resolutions calling for the property assessment proceedings per Proposition 218 for the Municipal Improvement Act of 1913 for County Service Area Number 23, CSA 23, Santa Margarita, in order to fund a state water connection to the state water project for drought reliability.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Benedix, are you going to lead off here?
Yes, I will, Mr. Patterson. Good morning, supervisors, members of staff, and members of the public. I'm Dean Benedix, the Utility Division Manager of Public Works, and we're here today to give you an overview of the property assessment proceedings that we're recommending to be approved today, which will include a preview of the drought reliability program and some water banking options that will be just Jill Ogren, our hydraulics engineer, will be addressing. Just a note, we do have Mark Hutchinson, our environmental manager, and John Diodati from our admin office, who works with the assessment proceedings to support us. So I'll turn it over to Jill now.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. I'd like to quickly go over where we stand and here's a little more focused view down on the ground. That's an existing, what you're seeing here is an existing blow-off valve, so the actual turn at the vault would occur right over there. So the assessment district, the assessment district proposes to have financing of the turnout, and the estimated costs at this point are $615 for the turnout, a financing cost which is associated with bond council of $30,000, and a one-time buy-in fee of $15,000. To date, we have determined that the USDA grant is about $300,000, so less the grant. We're looking at an amount to be financed through the assessment district of $360,000. Part of the project partnering, some of the considerations that we need to take into account is that the board would have to declare a water supply emergency prior to any additional water flows coming from the state water system. The project partner, whoever that might be, needs to be an existing state water contractor. And the program will operate like a bank, so deficits are allowed. Other considerations, the project partner would retain approximately 10%, sort of a lender's fee. The agreements could involve more than one partner, and at this point we don't know if there could be other conditions or costs associated. And the San Luis Obispo County has an unallocated reserve of state water, around 15,000 acre feet. And some other additional considerations are that during a drought, there is actually additional capacity in the pipeline due to reduced deliveries. State water pipeline has more capacity above the grade, so between, say, Shandon and Santa Margarita. And the treatment plant at Polonio Pass also has excess capacity for treating the water. So we've identified some possible water banking partners, the County Operations Center, a Zone 3 state water subcontractor, flood control district Zone 3, and Shandon. Some of the advantages and disadvantages to each of these I'll go through. The County Operations Center currently has a state water allocation of 425 acre feet, and they use only about 50 acre feet. The balance is currently exchanged with CMC to offset wastewater treatment. And in a water supply emergency situation, the board has the option to redirect 80 acre feet of water to Santa Margarita, and then details would be worked out probably through the agreement. And the advantage to this banking partner is that it's fully under the board's control. The disadvantage actually to the county operations center would be that they don't have a multiple water sources. They are reliant on the state water. A Zone 3 state water subcontractor, currently Oceano, Pismo, and CSA 12, which is Avalon, Port San Luis, are agencies that are state water contractors within Zone 3. And one of the ways that this is an advantage is that we would be able to utilize Lopez Reservoir to store the water. Pismo and Oceano both have existing allocations that exceed their current needs, and the Zone 3 agencies have multiple water resources. Some of them use Lopez water as well as they have their own groundwater through wells. And the disadvantage is now we're dealing with an outside agency, so the Board of Supervisors is not necessarily in control of that. Option C is the flood control zone 3, and again, you'd be able to use the Lopez Reservoir, and you actually have a larger allocation of state water to rely on. Probably the biggest drawback on this would be that it actually would require a new allocation of state water, and that in itself would require contract amendments with all the contractors. That makes it potentially more expensive, and the timing on when that would all happen is a little more uncertain. And Shandon is our fourth potential partner, although at this point in time, they are looking at taking makes a little more fiscal sense to do it that way. Part of today's board's actions is the approval of the preliminary engineer's assessment report, and the assessment report is going to determines the special benefit per parcel and assigns the assessments proportional to the special benefit received. This slide shows you what the proposed assessment district boundary is, and it is actually one and the same with the CSA 23 boundary. So all projects have both general and special benefits. A general benefit is when the public at large receives a benefit from the project, and special benefits are those when only specific parcels receive the benefits. The parcels within the drought reliability assessment boundary are going to receive the special benefit of a state water turnout that can then provide the ability to obtain water during a significant drought or other emergency. So just by virtue of having the actual physical connection there, all the parcels within CSA 23 have that ability to obtain water. The general benefits and special benefits as they relate to CSA 23 projects specifically is that, as I mentioned, the parcels all have the ability to receive state water. The general benefits that this project has is that we recognize that, for one thing, part of our partnering program is that 10% of the water is going to be given to a banking partner, and that banking partner is outside of CSA 23, and so it is considered a general benefit. And secondly, we also recognize that there are system losses that as the water travels through the pipelines in Santa Margarita, there are losses. In addition, we know that some of the water is used for firefighting purposes and construction uses, and those are all, we expect that some of the water that we would get in an emergency situation might be used for those kind of situations. Therefore, those are all considered general benefits and not specific to each parcel. So this just has a lot of numbers on it, but essentially it illustrates how the breakdown of how the capital costs are apportioned between special and general benefits. This chart is also found in the actual assessment engineer's report. The one-time buy-in fee, which is right here, the $15,000 is considered, you can see, is considered a general benefit because that will go to our banking partner. The financing costs of $30,000 is considered a special benefit since it's required in order to fund the capital costs. And the bottom line here is that the total of the special benefits needs to be more than the balance to the assessment district, and that's the test. So the method of allocating the assessments among the parcels were all divided into three categories by current land use: residential, commercial, and public authority. And then the relative benefit between the three categories was determined by using historical water usage. We use the last 5 years average. And so then we came up with a baseline benefit unit, and that's equal to one residential parcel. So the proposed assessments based on financing $360,000 is that the assessment for a typical residential parcel will be a one-time $671. They have the option to finance it through the USDA loan over 40 years, which gives an annual payment of roughly $35, and that equates to a monthly equivalent of $2.98. We do actually expect that that interest rate of 4.375 is going to be somewhat less than that. We've had indications that it could be as low as 3.75 from the USDA. And then you can see the potential cost for a commercial parcel as well. This chart sort of illustrates how the costs might vary depending on who our water banking partner is. I've only included probably the two that are the most likely at this stage. The one-time buy-in fee of we've estimated as $15,000 is actually a negotiable price, something we would work out with the banking partner. And the you'll see here the Zone 3 state water is significantly higher, and that's based on we've looked in the state water contract world to see what kind of prices that's going for, and there's it's an average somewhere between $1,000 as much as $5,000 an acre foot. So that's sort of like a potentially high number there. The other cost is and to set a hearing date, which will be May 22nd, 2012. So today we're doing the preliminary work for that. On April 5th, we are going to have a town hall meeting in Santa Margarita where we'll for anybody that wants to get more information on the ballot process and the project. And then on May 22nd is the last day to submit the ballots, and there will be a hearing. And then we will certify the results on June 5th. And if a majority protest of the ballots received, if a majority of the ballots received protest the formation of the assessment district, then the Proposition 218 does not pass. So the results of today's recommended actions are that the approving the resolutions and engineer's report begins the proceedings and setting the public hearing for May 22nd. And that's all I have. Hey,
thank you, Ms. Ogren. Actually, I have a couple of questions, if I may. I noted them on the PowerPoint. Page 7 of the PowerPoint, the project partnering, where you list the considerations, you say that the board must declare a water supply emergency pursuant to the state water code before additional water flows. And are you referring to the Central Coast Water Authority Board or the Board of Supervisors?
I'm referring to the Board of Supervisors. It's something that was done in March of 1991, the last time that Santa Margarita experienced a drought. Mm-hmm. The Board of Supervisors declared an emergency. It's water code like 350 to 359. There's certain things that have to happen. Mm-hmm. And once those have happened, your board can declare a water emergency and we can move forward from that.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that we can't start purchasing that additional 5 acre feet and storing that. I'm not clear what you mean by letting it flow. You mean delivering it to the community? We can't deliver it to Santa Margarita unless there's a water shortage emergency declared.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. That's when we would go to our banking partner and say, we need our 80 acre feet. We've just declared a water supply emergency, you know, and then we would begin to take their water.
Okay. And very good.
Could I on that topic, yeah. Thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chairman. So that's a year-by-year, case-by-case, rather than some general declaration that Santa Margarita's...
Exactly. Okay. It would be specific to Santa Margarita.
Specific situation.
Yeah.
On a specific date
exactly.
Or period of time. Okay.
Okay. Good. And then also I'm curious, you speak to additional capacity in the coastal branch of the state water pipeline. And at LAFCO, we had a conversation with Pismo Beach about that. And I know there's been an assessment done recently, and I'm curious to know if you know what that additional capacity is at this point.
I do not know that number.
Yeah, we've assessed that, and in rough numbers, it's hard to... I can give you a rough percentage of what it is, and it varies from reach to reach. But in this section, we believe it's in the range of about 8 to 10% additional capacity. But CCWA has a right to a portion of that capacity. There's still some negotiating that needs to happen to determine what each agency's capacity is as a result of that.
And what they would be allowed to take in terms of additional water, that still needs to be determined?
Yes. Yes, who has a right to that additional capacity?
Okay, and did you have a... Actually, you want to follow up on that?
If you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all.
I just wanted to clarify that the purchase of this 5 acre feet is proposed to come out of the allocation already in the hands of whatever banking partner we choose. We're not talking about going to the state water project and asking for 5 more acre feet to be pushed through the pipeline, right?
That's correct. That would only be the case if we were to choose flood control zone 3 as an agency to partner with them. If we go with a zone 3 subcontractor such as Pismo or Oceano, then they already have an allocation, as does the operations center.
So we're looking for a partner that is not using as much as they could and feels that they have the slack to be able to supply it in a tough time.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And then where you have the allocation of benefits and the cost summary, the breakdown on the table, there's a sizable contingency there, $120,000, administrative cost, $175,000. Should we be able to construct the turnout or intertie and make the connection, and we don't use that contingency or all of it.
Debt sooner?
Thank you. John Diodati with the Public Works Department. The way the USDA works, it's very similar to Los Osos. It's a loan-first program. So that's why we've been clear with what that amount of financing, the 360, would be. So if the project was to come in less, they would want us to still finance it with the loan, and then there'd be excess grant. So one of the two things would happen. We would argue that the user rates are high enough that it warrants for the grant to be used instead of the loan, mm-hmm. and we would make that case for the community, and hopefully that would work out to their benefit. Or the project would be financed with the 360. We would have an extra grant that we would then in turn use still in the community with the water system to help offset user costs in the future for pump or rehabilitations or some other project within the distribution system.
Okay, good. Thank you. Do I have any other questions for my colleagues? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I do have two requests to speak. Eric Greening, followed by Alan Volbrecht.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I was part of the subcommittee of the RAC that took a look at this, and I was sort of the resident state water skeptic of the group, and I guess the main impact my own participation has had was to couch the recommendations in the form of, if the state water option is chosen, then we recommend such and such and such and such. But they are following those such and such and such and such recommendations pretty closely. Obviously not to do it without identifying a partner. Of course, I do remain a state water skeptic, and I'm glad the LAFCO issue came up. So in the interest of consistency, some of the same issues apply to any potential use of state water that underlay the denial of the Los Robles del Mar annexation. Some of them are simply reliability issues from year to year, but some of them are challenges to the project as a whole, and possibilities that anyone who understands chaos theory and anyone who understands the behavior of nature knows that a system crash is possible, and becomes more possible on the longer the time horizon. All it will take, for example, would be a significant flood event through the Delta and or a significant earthquake on the Calaveras Fault. And a lot of the levees in the Delta could collapse. A lot of the so-called islands that are actually below the level of the channels. You have water, you have a levee, you have an island with peat that has been oxidizing year after year after year as the marsh vegetation was cleared away and the land was cleared for cultivation and being cultivated. That oxidation actually lowers the level of the soil. There are pumps keeping the water out of some of those islands because the muskrats are working on the levees. And by working on, I don't mean the way public works departments would. The Clifton Court Forebay, which pumps the water into the state water project where those pumps are located, is actually below sea level. It's deep enough in the delta that, for now, the outflow of fresh water from the Sierra to the sea keeps fresh water coming in those pumps. Sea level rise with climate change could bring brackish and eventually salt water to those pumps, as could major levee collapses and a surge of water into the delta. So that is sort of an overall caveat. If you're going to do this, you're doing it right. But I still question, should you depend on state water, period. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Alan Volbrecht.
Supervisor Patterson, members of the board, I am a current chairman of County Service Area 23. Our committee is delighted to have this first stage of the 218 vote before you all this morning, and we hope that it's going to be approved and carried on, and we look forward to the conclusion of the voting when the votes are opened or tabulated on May 22nd. It's been a long and winding road getting here, many years, more than a decade, like many of these projects. Supervisor Patterson's office, and with Amy's help, has been instrumental in keeping us on task, and I'd have to also credit Jill Ogren, who's burned up many Thursday evenings, one a month, for the last several years to keep us on task and all herded along. She's had various methods employed, including elevated blood sugar levels from home-baked goodies that she brings in. We're appreciative of that. With that, we just appreciate.
I would note that the state water issues revolving around the LAFCO action on potential annexation to Pismo Beach are really different than the ones that are before us today. And again, just to be clear, the latest information we have is the state water project expects to be able to deliver somewhere around 60 or a little bit more percent of its normal allocation over a length of time. So with this minor shift being proposed along with the drought buffer, I think we are, and the water banking with the potential partner, I think we're well within the reliability of the state water project on this. And would certainly defer to you as the supervisor of the district for a motion, but
yes,
I'm prepared if you'd
thank you, Supervisor Gibson, for that clarification regarding state water. I concur with your assessment, and because Santa Margarita is in the 5th District, I will move staff's recommendation so we can move forward with this 218 vote.
Second.
Okay. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
And Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jill and Dean, for your presentation. We'll move on to the next item, and Mr. Meacham returns to the dais. We've provided the opportunity for you to vote on whether or not you want to use state water as a drought reliability source. So
I'll drink to that.
All right, good. The next item on the agenda is closed session. I'll open it to the public and have no request to speak on closed session. So I will close public comment and ask County Council Warren Jensen for a time estimate.
About 30 minutes.
Okay, very good. Thank you, and we will reconvene at 1:30.
Microphones are live.
Very good. Thank you. Welcome to the afternoon session of the March 20th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Mr. Jensen, would you report out of closed session, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Warren Jensen, the County Council. The board did meet in closed session. No reportable action was taken.
Very good. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is presentations. I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded that we adopt the presentations calendar. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. And with that, if Mr. Groth could come up to the lectern, it gives me great pleasure to read the resolution proclaiming March 2012 as Professional Social Work Month in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas the social work profession has been instrumental in achieving civil rights and human rights advances in the United States and across the globe for more than a century, and whereas programs and services provided by professional social workers are essential elements of the American society safety net, and whereas social workers function as specialists, consultants, private practitioners, educators, community leaders, policymakers, and researchers, and whereas professional social workers in San Luis Obispo County serve our most vulnerable populations in agencies and institutions, including Tri-County's Regional Center, Drug and Alcohol Services, County Department of Social Services, County Behavioral Health, Transitions Mental Health Association, Atascadero State Hospital, California Men's Colony, San Luis Obispo Veterans Center, home health agencies, skilled nursing facilities, hospice agencies, local hospitals, foster care agencies, counseling centers, and private practices. You're essentially everywhere. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim March 2012 as Professional Social Work Month and recognizes that our nation would be less successful without the contribution of America's 640,000 social workers, and further calls upon all citizens to join with the National Association of Social Workers in celebration and support of the social work profession. And now Mr. Marvin Gross is the alternate regional director of the National Association of Social Workers, and you are here to receive this. So,
yes.
And I know you have others to introduce as well.
Wow. Thank you, Mr. Patterson, Chairman Patterson, and members of the board. We appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule for hospital social workers such as Rod Youngquist over at Sierra Vista. I hear it, see a nod. Some of you have either used services of social work services, or your family have, or you will. And there's Shelley Blanc up at Twin Cities Hospital. There's hospice social workers such as Ashley Hahn and all of her co-workers at Hospice Partners, who are serving those people who are dying and their families. There's the Department of Social Service social workers who are in various capacities, including Lori Hunstad here, who has been in adoption services for the county for many years. There's the Children's and Adult Protective Services, Drug and Alcohol Services workers. We have private practice psychotherapists, such as Jeanette Davis over here.
Over
over there.
Hard to miss.
Social workers are providing the greatest amount of psychotherapy in this country. Not everybody knows that. We have social workers at Atascadero State Hospital who are serving probably the most difficult mentally ill patients to serve in the state, if not the country, and are providing, you know, treatment to them, education to them, and management on our behalf. There's the psychiatric social workers there. There's the forensic social workers at the California Men's Colony who are also often working with the mentally ill. There's the medical social workers, such as Catherine Aceto, at places like the Central Coast Kidney Disease Center, working with people on dialysis. We have social workers in administrative positions, such as Grant Ernst, now retired as former clinical director at Atascadero State Hospital. Donna King, who was the longtime director of our very unique volunteer Hospice of San Luis Obispo. Sarah Bartlett, director of the Alzheimer's Association. And this morning at the barbershop, I ran into Phil Gammons of the Tri-Counties Regional Center, who told me he's retired now with 39 years of developing plans and providing resources for our developmentally ill, developmentally disabled in this county. We also are involved in lobbying. I think that was mentioning in the political process. We'll be sending people to, we have three students, we'll be sending to lobby days in Sacramento next month. And one of them is here. State your name.
Casey. Casey Chappie.
Okay. Sorry, I skipped on that. So now I want to, I've mentioned some of these services and a few of these people, and maybe you recognize them or you know they're coworkers or whatever. So I'd like to, we're going to ask social workers to rise later to be recognized, but I want to now introduce Leland Lofgren, who has, or will be in 2 days, selected as our Social Worker of the Year. Leland is a three-term chair of our local unit, a certified sex therapist in private practice, a part-time medical social worker at Twin Cities Hospital, a community volunteer who was working, working on the formation of the recently opened Noor Foundation Health Clinic. Leland.
Thank you. Thank you to the Board of Supervisors, and thank you, Marv Gross, for your consistent service to the National Association of Social Workers and your work in the social work profession. Today, we are recognizing the work of professional social workers nationwide as part of the month celebration, and this includes San Luis Obispo County. We have an ad in the Tribune today to remind you to thank the social worker for their work. We are reminding social workers to take the time to appreciate themselves, to appreciate the work, the effort, and the time that they put into improving the lives of the people that you work with and the community that you live in. We work in the helping profession because we are able to tolerate the pain and suffering that we bear witness to and still move forward to make progress and hold hope. Sometimes that high pain tolerance allows us to let our own needs go unmet. Please use Social Work Month as an invitation to appreciate the need for balance between work and healing in your own life. For over 100 years, professional social workers have been improving the fabric of society by caring for those who have been left behind and for those who have lost their voices. It is imperative that we do not lose our voice, personally or professionally. This morning, the Board of Supervisors and our community members were charged with caring for our vulnerable homeless population by addressing the many mental health, drug and alcohol, and situational issues which need to be addressed hand in hand with homelessness. Thank you for acknowledging that the tireless workers are in our community serving the more vulnerable populations. So at this time, I'd like to ask the social workers who have come here today to stand up. And again, we thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to just take a moment to salute social workers here
and social workers throughout our county and social workers everywhere. My aunt was a social worker for 35 years in Paterson, New Jersey, so I knew since childhood about what an important and noble profession it is, and I'm grateful for all of the. I know some of you are on the older end of it, and still working hard, and some of you are entering it. But it's so important to our community. So thank you so much.
Yes, and I echo those sentiments. Thank you for being here this afternoon, and for all the work you do. Okay, with that, Madam Clerk, would you read the next item on the agenda, please?
Certainly. That would be item number 18, a project update, request for board direction related to design-build contracting approval of a sole-source contract for professional engineering services with Corolo Engineers in the amount of $942,669 and approval of a sole-source contract for environmental services with Far Western Anthropological Research Group in the amount of $898,106 as previously authorized for the Los Osos Wastewater Project, Los Osos, California.
Okay. Mr. Waddell, are you going to lead us through the presentation today?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Take it away.
Chairman and members of the board, I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. Have a thorough but relatively brief presentation today. I have hard copy handouts that are coming down the dais. There's also some at the end of the dais for the public. In summary of the update today, it's going to be a project status update covering a number of items. The collection system and treatment facility items will also include discussion of the action items that are before you today. In the staff report. So starting with schedule, we're completing the design phase that's been going on for almost the last year on the collection system as well as the Midtown restoration, and we're entering the bidding and awarding process. And the timeline is that the Midtown restoration is already out to bid. The first of the collection system packages is planned to be on your agenda for April 3rd. With the remaining two packages coming at approximately three-week increments, and then having bid period, opening bids, getting back on your agenda for award, and then moving into construction by starting in May and ramping up as we start construction in May through June. The Midtown construction project is about the fifth item down. It's actually a pretty short construction time frame, about 2 months. Whereas the collection system is approximately 2 years. Well, it's 2 years for the pipelines and 2.5 years for the pump stations. So the majority of the construction will be completed mid-2014, and then for the following 6 months, wrapping up the pump stations and preparing for startup. The treatment process is something that is on your agenda today to really initiate. And we plan for approximately 1 year preliminary design and request for proposals and procurement phase, and then moving into construction of approximately 18 months, and that's tailored to coincide with the completion of the collection system so that the entire project would be completed and ready for connections at the end of 2014, and then property owners would then start connecting to the system. The other item on there is the conservation plan, and that's on there. In addition to public interest, it's kind of the other capital project that's going to be ongoing throughout this process. And the plan was submitted to the Coastal Commission as part of our overall recycled water management plan last fall. We've been in dialogue with the Coastal Commission, but we have not with Coastal staff, but we've not received final approval. But it is a pre-construction condition, so expect us to receive that before we start construction a little later this year. And then we're prepared to come back to your board for approvals to initiate that program and start doing rebates and retrofits and really get that conservation program moving. Moving on to the project budget, and there are more details in the staff report. But the want to draw your attention. Collection system construction, which is the the major work task, and involves a number of details that I'll be going through. The design has been divided into three bid packages. They're termed areas A and D as one package, area B and C is another package, and the pump stations as a third bid package. And just as a quick overview, A and D are the numbered streets, the Baywood Park, Town of El Morro area, areas north of Los Osos Valley Road, B and C are Los Osos Valley Road and the areas south, as well as Cuesta by the Sea and Sunset Terrace areas. And then the pump stations contract is, of course, for the equipment and facilities at the pump stations throughout the community. So we do plan to bring the first package to your board on April 3rd to start the bidding process, and then sequence the next packages approximately 3 weeks apart. And the award and construction starts will kind of follow the same schedule. And this is a similar approach that we took to the Nacimiento Water Project, where we staggered the bid openings for those construction packages, and we expect to see more competitive bids as we go forward, as contractors submit their bids and they're able to see what other bid prices are, and contractors that win a bid will then have a competitive edge for future bids. And again, on the schedule, construction will be starting over a several week period in June and July, and again, an approximately 2 year construction schedule for the pipelines, and then the pump stations rounding out 2014. Pre-construction conditions have been an important work effort as we've moved forward. As far as the coastal permit, the draft plans are required by the Coastal Commission, the Habitat Management Plan and Recycled Water Management Plan, which also includes the Conservation Program, have been submitted to Coastal. And now with the completion, as we're completing the final design, we'll be submitting the majority of the remaining items, because they are related to the details in the final design. So be preparing submittal packages that address each condition and reference how they're addressed in the plans and specs very specifically. And those will be going for then sign off for approval for construction. The USDA has a number of pre-construction conditions related to their funding, and they're substantially complete, and USDA loan is ready to fund actually upon award of the Midtown restoration. So that'll be the start of construction will be triggered by the Midtown contract. Also, as we move into construction, public outreach will be gearing up, and plan to initiate that in May, immediately before, probably approximately 6 weeks before we start construction, to have it relevant and fresh in people's minds as we're getting into construction, and really be addressing the potential construction impacts in the community and in the neighborhoods. And we're going to kind of really just hit it from a number of perspectives, from community meetings, mailers, signage, multimedia. I mean, and multimedia is going to include a number of things, from the internet to social media to television, radio, to get the word out. And it'll be an ongoing. We're not just talking about a program before we start construction, but it'll be an ongoing thing during construction as the construction progresses through neighborhoods, so that each neighborhood can be getting the information they need, and whole community can be getting information related to traffic impacts and any construction detail that people are interested in. We'll be setting up. There will be a single point of contact who will coordinate questions and requests for information from the public, and then pass those questions on to the appropriate people, whether it's Public Works or Supervisor Gibson's office or the construction management team. But that way there will be continuity in that outreach program. Another key part, and that's related to today's recommendations, is the archaeological monitoring. And this is a key environmental requirement of the EIR and the Section 106 permit. It requires monitoring, excavations, reporting of through a large area of the collection system. And the Far Western Agreement is to meet that scope, to do that work required under the permits. The recommendations for sole source are numerous. First of all, Far Western has been involved in the project for over approximately a decade at least. They were the consultant for the CSD. They've been the county's consultant throughout our environmental review and permitting process, so they have firsthand knowledge of the project beyond, knowledge that no other consulting firm does need to be initiated in order to meet our schedule and correspond with the collection system. And we do plan to continue with our design-build contracting approach. That is, that's the recommendation, which follows both public contract code and funding agency guidelines.
Thank you.
It requires a preliminary design to approximately a 20% level and then a request for proposal process that would go out for a competitive price competition and selection process. We do have the ability to select either on low price or best value. We recommend that we don't need to make that decision right now. That would be as we're completing the procurement and RFP bidding documents that we would then make that determination and as we bring it to your board to on how we're going to do that selection. But the preliminary design process is planned to take approximately 12 months, including the selection, and then the design build work, so completing the design and doing the construction, is planned for approximately 18 months, so then it will dovetail with the collection system completion. There's a couple of recommendations in the board item today, and the first is for canceling the existing design build process. The county had, in order to be ready for construction, had started the design build procurement and pre-qualified contractors as we were completing the coastal development permit application, and that was actually started in 2008. So there's a couple of canceling it is reasonable for both practical reasons in that it's over 3 years old, and also it's an agency requirement. They've requested that we cancel the process if we're going to continue with design build. They want to see a fresh start. And the other is recommendation for an oxidation ditch process. There's two, and this is the secondary treatment process of the treatment plant. There's two processes that are approved in the coastal permit. There's oxidation ditch and BioLac. And those are the two that are specified. And so oxidation ditch is one of those that are approved. It's also the most cost competitive. And one of the key things there is that it's not a proprietary process. The other, a BioLac, is a trademark proprietary process where if specifying that would effectively eliminate cost competition on what is a major element of the treatment plant. So that's one of the considerations for oxidation ditch. It's improvement treatment capability, especially with the requirements that are in the waste discharge requirements, which is the treatment permit from the regional board. That was issued in the past year, and so our treatment requirements are now set, and an oxidation ditch has a proven ability to consistently, over the long term with many plants and a long history, to meet those requirements. Footprint, the site is, it's an ample site, but there are some topographical features and that could limit some of the layout and allows us to meet that. And also it's compatible with some of the other agencies in the county that also have oxidation ditches. CMC, Pismo Beach, oxidation ditches are also planned at Morro Bay, and Paso Robles is planning a new plant, and I believe that is also planned to be oxidation ditch. So we'd have compatibility of the systems and as far as the labor force for operating those systems within our county. Moving forward with the contracting process includes the recommendation for the Corollo agreement. And it's also a sole source recommendation. Corollo is one of the most respected and experienced wastewater design firms in the nation. They do a range of design, but wastewater design is one of their specialties. They also have extensive experience with oxidation ditches and wastewater recycling They've been involved in this project since the county started our efforts in 2007, and they also have design-build experience, which is important, especially in consideration of the public contracting code requirements. The public contracting code that we would be doing design-build under specifically requires that any firm, any consulting firm involved in the preparation of the preliminary design and the RFP package cannot then compete on the design-build bid for the design-build contracts. So we have a this preliminary design package at a little under $1 million, and have the opportunity for a top national design firm with design-build experience to represent the county's interests. And then they are precluded from the potentially more lucrative design-build contract, which is anticipated to be with design and construction around $25 million, or USDA coastal development permit. And construction is planned to start with Midtown restoration in May, and then have everything ramped up by July. And again, public outreach program will be also starting up in the near future. I'd be happy to, that concludes the presentation, and I'd be happy to answer questions from your board.
Supervisor Meacham.
John, have we completed all of the property acquisition necessary for this project?
We have completed the property acquisitions for the collection system. So we have completed that right-of-way certification, and so we are clear to move forward with the collection system. On the treatment plant, we are well underway and have the ability to complete those, but they've not been completed at this time. But those are, again, that's the pre-construction condition of the treatment plant approximately a year from now. So we have about a year to complete those.
So when can we anticipate seeing the completion of all acquisition necessary for treatment? And
we plan to have the treatment done by September.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Waddell? I see none at this point, so I will open it to public comment. And we will begin with Elaine Watson, followed by Eric Greeney.
Good afternoon. Elaine Watson, Los Osos. The Los Osos Sustainability Group filed a request for revocation of the LOWWP from the Coastal Commission. I'm sure you know about this. But you should also understand our frustration at being forced to follow this course of action. After many trips to this chamber, to agency meetings from Sacramento to Marina del Rey, letters and meetings with agencies and other parties, EIR and Planning Commission appeals, voicing our alarm at the very serious shortcomings in this project, but to very little avail. Having exhausted all recourse available to us, we were left with no other options. What do you do? There's hardly any issue in this revocation that we didn't bring to you first and many times. We did our research, read as many documents as we could get, sometimes having to resort to freedom of information to get access to those documents, consulted with highly reputable experts in the specific fields, hired consultants to analyze our conclusions, hired attorneys, expert in water policy, etc. We did our due diligence. And gentlemen, I want to remind you that we're citizens trying to remedy a train wreck. We're simply citizens here trying to make this better. We've had 400 acre feet of conservation in the last 5 years, yet seawater is advancing at an alarming rate. And by all standards, mitigations to address it are grossly inadequate. There are other serious issues in this project, all of which you are surely familiar with by now, but that list of issues is now in the hands of the Coastal Commission, because that's where we've been forced to plead these problems. Each one of your districts is in one sort of water crisis or another, or will be. Yet when you've had the opportunity to dig for some truth, ask the hard question, exercise your discretionary thinking, constructively address a jeopardized water supply, you set back and let this proceed without objection. Has anyone here read the revocation request yet? Judging by no response, I'm assuming that you haven't. I'm going to leave each of you a disc, and I hope that you will look at it, because our issues have been well thought out, well researched. We've consulted, as I've said. These are not frivolous concerns, and we do hope that they will be addressed, I guess, by the Coastal Commission. This is the most expensive wastewater project you will likely see in your careers. I hope that you will take the time, really, seriously, to do your job on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Eric Greening, followed by Dr. C. Height.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and first question, I'm glad to hear that there was questioning about the timing relative to acquisition of the Giacomazzi site. My specific question is, when do you expect to have a resolution of necessity hearing in front of your board for that site? And my corollary comment is, among the findings you have to make relative to that site and the project as a whole is that this project is being designed consistent with the greatest public good and the least private injury. Sometimes landowners are interested in more than money. So that's one issue. Another issue, the Regional Transit Authority schedule and routing through the Los Osos area may be changing in June. Possible add-ons, what kind of possible, what if further work is needed beyond what's in this contract with Far Western, what kind of work would it be? Could it include rerouting, redesigning of the project to avoid cemeteries? If not, then what other kind of work would be done? What would be expected of Far Western versus what would be expected of the engineering type people and so on? When push comes to shove and you have to choose between a cemetery and a major construction change order, what will give? Who will be in the loop of that decision? There could be some very large issues in a project that requires a very large amount of excavation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Dr. C. Hyatt, followed by Don Bearden.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos.
Bring the new year in, bring us home.
Thank you, Ms. Hyatt. Don Bearden, followed by Julie Tacker.
My name is Don Bearden. I live in a prohibition zone in Los Osos. Board members, I urge you to accept the project update and approve all steps necessary to get this project underway. Do not do anything to further delay this project and increase its cost. If the other thing I'm concerned with, if when you were doing the project update...
And you were way off base this morning when you challenged Ms. Taylor, Mr. DeFada, Ms. Owen on their comments. There is no way to know from this staff report what will be discussed in the afternoon's update. And what is not discussed are the many things that they touched on this morning, and I hope you reconsider and do let them speak later on. When I have been before your board and asked many, many times for an update, Mr. Teixeira has been here over a year, and he really doesn't know the depths of this project. Unless you go back and read the coastal development permit and the subsequent previous documents and the EIR, you simply don't know. This project has many facets and many tentacles. And what I wanted to see in an update was some progress on a second 218. I wanted explanation for our habitat conservation plan and the firing of one consultant and the new RFP that's out and we are hiring another. I wanted an update on the grant that's proposed for our LCP. I wanted a groundwater management plan. I wanted coastal conditions laid out in front of me. I want you to know, not one of the 180 some conditions that the project must meet has been approved by the Coastal Commission. Regional Water Quality Control Board has their conditions. USDA has conditions. State Revolving Fund has conditions. The purchase of the Jacamazi site, you have to record a public lot on top of the purchase. You do have to go through an eminent domain process. The roads and drainage show that came to Los Osos has damage outside the approved footprint for the coastal development permit. A recycled water management plan, a habitat management plan, progress with the ISJ, the Tri-W restoration, what does that mean? The library pump house was moved to the library. It's above ground, Mr. Gibson. You told LOCAC it was a below ground facility. I want to hear about your trip to Washington and the bags of money you brought back. There's monitoring programs. There's decommissioning of septic tanks. There's sign plans, lighting plans, ag easements, protection of the ag land, conservation. At the beginning of your due diligence, it started a one-year clock. That clock was
Thank
met
you, Ms. Tacker.
A week ago. There's
Thank you. Your
time's so up. Much more to update.
Bo Cooper, followed by Barry Brannon. Bo here?
I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bo. I was looking.
Let's go.
How about Barry Brannon? He's coming. Okay, Bo, take it away.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's really just painful what people are saying, Elaine, Julie. Please look at the disc they gave you. The Los Osos Sustainability Group came up with this terrific set of environmental problems, not terrific problems, but deep understanding of what the many, 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 many problems are. It's 170-some-odd pages with documentation about problems that environmental problems that the sewer is having. Please take a look at it. For anybody who's listening or at home who wants to see the disc, if you go to csclososos.com, csclososos.com, you can see the information about environmental, and you can see the information that's on this disc. And it's just very, very convincing. You guys feel committed to all the money you've spent already. Please look at this and then say, it's not reasonable to continue. I actually want to talk about economic stuff. At the last project update, it was said, quote, nobody should have to leave their home to pay for a sewer. And then later on, at the TAC draft report, said, the Prohibition Zone residents who will be paying for the project are predominantly middle and lower income people. For some, any increase in their monthly cash flow outflow will be disastrous. Well, then the last part is taken out for political reasons because they wanted to have the sewer. But there's general agreement that won't work. One more from Pavo's letter to the State Water Board in November 2011. According to the wastewater user charge survey report published by the State Water Board, the monthly cost to Los Osos property owners would be the highest in the state for a similar population, served, and nearly five times the state average. Now, this is from Pavo's, the first paragraph of his letter to the state. It's just out of control. When I looked at that same Exhibit B in that same letter, they're talking about benchmarks, the EPA affordability benchmark, you know, it's 2%.
My focus is going to be on the wastewater treatment plant facility itself. I see today that it's almost a no-bid contract to allow Carrillo to design or set up the specifications for the design for the wastewater treatment plant. The oxidation ditch, the design that they're using, was pretty good design about 50 years ago. However, since there's been a great deal of technology improvements that reduce the cost of building a plant, the plant itself is more efficient, it's smaller, and it produces a treated effluent that is pretty reusable without going through some extra cost to get it up to the Title 22 water reuse for unrestricted reuse. The way the contract is set up now, you're not even inviting this technology to come and show you what they can do. I know that at least one of the supervisors has visited the plant, and it's hard to tell what this is all about, but there's a tale of two cities. We have the city of Fillmore, and we have the city of Santa Paula. They both built wastewater treatment plants perhaps 3 miles apart. One of them costs, and both of them have the same size, same output. The cost for Fillmore was over twice of what it cost for Santa Paula. The effluent that comes out of the Santa Paula plant is good enough that they can use it on the farms. Fillmore has to go through a great deal of hoops to do this. This other type of project has been fought from the very beginning by the engineering department of the county with no clear explanation. And I think you have to go back to what they say in the doctors, that you should do the patient no harm. And I think without looking at this alternative design and allowing for it to be brought to you, you're doing a great deal of harm to your patients. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brannon. Jeff Edwards, followed by Richard Margetson.
Mr. Patterson, board members, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 35-year resident of Los Osos. I object to sole sourcing the contract before you to Carrillo Engineers. They don't need the $25 million design-build contract. They have every other contract in this county for engineering services. You may remember your master water plan, I mean study, that you recently considered. It was, I think you changed the name to a study because it was of such poor quality. They did that. They actually are the go-to engineering firm for your public works director. In fact, their total with this contract, if you choose to approve it, is up to about $3 million. That goes with their other building partners, and they all come from the same community of Walnut Creek up north. And we know HDR, they got a contract for $7.6 million, CDM, $5 million. So the numbers for engineering just keep going up. The reasons given to you for sole sourcing this to them by your public works department are disingenuous. The only reason they gave it to them was because they wanted to, not because of familiarity or timing. Enough of that. The second point I'd like to make Last Thursday, the Regional Water Quality Control Board met in San Luis Obispo, and apparently it's a recycled water facility. What you neglected to give the regional board staff was the recycled water management plan. Their staff was quite surprised. It's been out since late last year. They don't have a copy, or at least didn't until we gave them one. The regional board wants to hear from you. In fact, Mr. Gibson, they want to hear from him on May 3rd, what's going on. This is a form over substance document. The map on page 27, see all the green? All that's green is not grass, gentlemen. And in fact, if you look at the urban water or the urban recycle plan, it's going to send water to four schools in our community. They've grossly overestimated the amount of effluent that will be consumed at these facilities and are spending millions of dollars to achieve this. Then there's the ag reuse plan. Of course, we're giving the water to dryland farmers. The real farmers, the pros, they don't want it. We're going to give it to the Joes. No seawater intrusion mitigation. Again, form over substance. And I'd like to close by asking, why did we take $18 million of grant money and reduce our low interest rate clean water state revolving?
An end run around both of the major water purveyors in Los Osos that will be affected by this agreement one way or another, and the customers of both of those purveyors, water rates in the future will go up because of this agreement. Why weren't they consulted? Why weren't they informed that this contract was going to the school board tonight? Instead, an end run was done because it's a condition that has to be met. This recycled water plan has to be met as a contingency for the coastal permit and for the funding agencies. There's going to be objection tonight at the school board meeting. District representatives are going. We think Golden State's sending a representative, and representatives from the subcommittee working on the rate increase for the Los Osos CRC are going to be there to ask them to postpone this item and tell them that we were not involved in the process. Now, Mr. Waddell informed one of the members of the committee that the ISJ was informed that this was part of the process. Well, one of the ISJ members actually sits on the subcommittee that met this noon. This contract hasn't been before the ISJ. The concept of water recycling and the concept of charging for it by the county and where the funds were going to be has been discussed in the ISJ. But this contract was not before them. It has not been before either purveyor. And this, there's no way the school board wouldn't adopt this. It's totally in their favor. They lock in rates for 5 years. What water purveyor locks in rates for 5 years on recycled water? Which means the potable customers, the rest of the community, as O&M goes up for both of those purveyors, those customers, which are not all prohibition zone customers, rates will have to go up to cover operating budgets. Plus giving $50,000 out of the wastewater funds to do on-lot retrofits to accept this water, you're going to have a problem with that, too. Stay tuned. You may want to come tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Supervisor Gibson asked that I go ahead and let folks that spoke on this item this morning speak this afternoon. And Ms. Watson was light enough to offer to defer her testimony until this afternoon. So if you would like to have another turn, you're welcome to do that, Ms. Watson. Okay. Lindy Owen, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen. Thank you for following the Brown Act, as we hope you always do. The presentation is definitely lacking. I could have brought the other, I think, 24 items that are still not being addressed in a project update. Project update in the past used to be that we were brought up to date on what was going on with the project. This was basically to tell us about the new soil sourcing And even the one thing they didn't mention was that your recommendation number three is to waive board approval of expenditures so that this group of crooks, as I'm going to call them right now, will be able to spend, they will not have to get your permission to spend over $25,000 on any item. So here we go. We're just opening up the doors. Take our money. Take all the money you want and have a good time with this project. Let's see if we can't make it even more expensive. Corello Engineering, the love boat, I call them, they want $942,669 to design a sewer plant that was shovel-ready, Mr. Gibson. Were you misinformed? Did Mr. Ogren not tell you that it wasn't shovel-ready, or did you just go along with him to go to Washington to see if you could get some of that money? It isn't shovel-ready, and we all knew that. But now we're going to pay another million to keep upgrading something that's basically copy-paste. It's the same stupid project on a site that hasn't been purchased. How can you design a project if you don't know if you're going to get that site? But I guess eminent domain works when you're the big guy. Far Western Anthropological Research Group, they're going to get $898.106. I'm really concerned about this. They note that there are two major sites that they expect to get into. They're going to be unearthing. Our project costs will pay to take all the cement out of the area. I think there's a 20-foot border that has to go around it, depending on the size. If this is a giant village, it's going to be rather large. And they get to excavate, and they're going to have Cal Poly come out here. This has always been a little nerve-wracking for me to know that Cal Poly is going to have the largest archaeological dig in the state of California.
That have already been done. Did we already pay for this once or twice? 5 or 6 years ago, the new CSD, after the other people were recalled, all three of them, the new CSD had a project for $105 a month. They were ready to go until 2701 messed it all up. Then 3 years ago, Mr. Gibson had a shovel-ready project, went to Washington with hat in hand, giving the money, $200 million. I haven't seen a penny of it. Question is, why do these things have to be done again? Can't you guys modify the old studies? Mr. Brandon is totally right about this plant. It's antiquated. Ecofluid is way ahead technology. You don't go to the Chevy plant, Ford plant, Cadillac plant and say, I like your fender, I like your engine, I like your brakes. And in my years of in aircraft, a customer comes to Lockheed and says, I want a plane that goes from here to there, it uses this much amount of fuel, it takes this much amount of time, and this is the maintenance cost. Have at it. Then he goes down to Douglas, and he says the same thing. Then he goes to North America and says the same thing. Here, instead, the same old cronies, the sole source, no bid contract, has a smell of suspicion of a lot of corruption here going on. Why didn't you have the bidders choose their teams and then bid all the costs instead of you guys always going to the board for more money? It would have been done sooner and cheaper. All you had to do was the funding. Okay, sir, I've had it for the day. I'll go take my Valium now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon. I am Gwen Taylor, the one that was cut off this morning because I am not on the agenda, per se. Unfortunately, or fortunately, on September 27th of 2011, your board approved an engineering design agreement with Camp Dresser for the final design of the project collection system and recycled water distribution and reuse system. Now you are going again outside to get Corello Engineering involved in a project when they were doing the basin plan for the county. They got the water distribution from the Los Osos water basin. It was coming from Morro Bay. How in the world can you trust an engineering firm that can't even get it straight where Los Osos gets its water? This is ridiculous. Not only that, as I tried to tell you this morning, and I will try again to tell you, that the nitrate well testing has been requested by the regional board again, and not just requested, they are advising this board to approve the nitrate testing and do it now, not at the time that the sewer plant has been installed and is producing water. If you don't believe what I am telling you, please contact the regional board staff, as they were directed on March the 15th to get to you, meaning this board, and let you know what they are asking. This board has not put out the information that is required or is necessary for the development of this project. If you take the word of your staff, Public Works alone, you are setting yourselves up for a lot of disruption and a lot of problems. You're the final deciders. Decide, but do it in a manner that you are informed about, and don't only take your staff's information. Get it someplace else. You cannot always depend upon them to give you the facts, because they want it one way and you may not want it that way. Check it out. Make sure what you're voting for.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. That concludes my request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board. And I don't know if staff has any follow-up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think there are a couple of items that I would like staff to provide a little more detail on. Before I do, though, I'd like to comment that Ms. Owen's characterization of our staff as crooks and what happens should we find unexpected cultural resources.
Well, this is John Waddell. It looks like Mark's going to coming up to the podium, and he can address the basic approach, and I can follow up if needed.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson, Public Works Environmental. The project does have a very extensive document called the Cultural Resources Treatment Plan that not only relies on all of the studies that have been done, describes how the monitoring will happen, where pre-construction excavations will occur, but also is a very clear process on how to deal with undiscovered cultural resources should they occur. Certainly there are a great many cultural resources in the community, many of which have already been excavated with the previous project. They took the approach to begin their project by excavating areas that they knew to contain resources, which has resulted in an extensive collection, which is currently housed at Cal Poly, and hence the reference to Cal Poly students. Students are not being tasked for monitoring. They're assisting in the lab work to properly assess and categorize resources that have already been collected from the site. In short, with all of the requirements of CEQA, the federal requirements, Section 106 that comes from EPA and USDA, we feel the project is very well covered on the cultural resources front. There's been some reference to the potential for extensive buried cultural remains. That's been looked at extensively in Los Osos through dating the soils and the sites on top. We don't expect massive villages or burial grounds to turn up 10, 12, 13 feet below the surface. It just doesn't match with the geology of the area.
All right. Thank you.
I do have a follow-up question.
Sure.
Thank you. Do you anticipate at all, Mark, any type of rerouting necessary due to any kind of excavations?
We do have that contingency in the project, depending on the difficulties involved, but certainly avoidance of resources when they're encountered is an important consideration. Would involve potentially tunneling underneath the site or if possible, moving a line across to the other side of the street. That's definitely a possibility.
But that, I mean, I know that there's contingencies in here relative to, I guess, that. But that would also warrant engineering changes as well, would it not?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That's the consideration, is that you have the design engineers and your project engineers, your resident engineers are all involved. And it's laid out in the treatment plan how the process would go, of who needs to be involved, and you look at other utilities, slope, gradients, all of those things. If that occurs, it would probably be relative to very isolated sites, but we're definitely geared up for that potential.
Thank you. Supervisor Gittin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And moving through the sequence of public comment, Mr. Bearden raised the question of the cost for on-lot connections and whether there's help available. There will be. We will be working with property owners. I think that conversation is just a little premature for today. We've outlined some approaches that we might take, but it's certainly on the minds of staff, and as we proceed into construction at the right time, we'll get going on that. Mr. Brannon raised the question of whether oxidation ditch is old technology, and I think he was suggesting that the treatment plant be replaced by one that uses a technology called membrane bioreactor, although he didn't say that phrase. I wonder if you could comment on the choice of technologies, Mr. Waddell.
Yes, I can, and I'm familiar with the projects that Mr. Brannon's referring to, and it is a membrane bioreactor project, an MBR, which is the technology that the CSD had planned and started construction on in 2005. It was specifically studied in the environmental impact report and analyzed from a number of perspectives. It's not one of the approved technologies for the project. Any treatment facility designer or constructor or design build team will have the ability, though, to compete for the project that will be in the preliminary design and in the project permit. So, but a firm that builds membrane bioreactors is their specialty. Well, that is not in the approved project, and there's a number of reasons for that, and it was fully analyzed and discussed during the approval process.
And to colleagues, in our staff report, we did have a tech memo that explained the pros and the cons, and I believe that that it's a very thoughtful analysis and makes the obvious choice of moving forward in the design build process with the oxidation ditch technology. And whether colleagues had questions about that, we might discuss. I'd certainly be open to that. The real substantive items before us here are we're being asked to approve a couple of sole source contracts. And when we do that, I think we need to take an especially careful look. Ms. Owen did misrepresent the request of the waiver, which is we're being requested to waive the requirement of putting out requests for proposals. And instead, Realms is I think a good point, plus the matter of getting another contractor, engineering contractor, up to speed. So, on the basis of that careful analysis and the material in our staff report, I conclude that staff's recommendation on sole sourcing that is correct as well. I'm prepared with a motion unless colleagues have other questions or comments.
Are there any other questions or comments from members of the board?
Seeing none, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
On all points.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation on all points. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes. That concludes our agenda for today. Meeting's adjourned. We will reconvene at 9 a.m. on March 27th.